I'm Carson Stooley. With me is Fangraphs Managing Editor Dave Cameron, and this is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast. Yes, Dave Cameron, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast, episode 10.
Congratulations on saying Pitch Talks.
Right, it is the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast. I'm Carson Stooley, editor of Fangraphs. You are Dave Cameron. You're the managing editor of Fangraphs. Hello, yeah. Dave. How are you?
So I manage you because you're the editor.
That's true. Yep. And you manage those who are also not me is another thing you do. Dave Cameron, you know that why the Pitch Talks Blue Jays Podcast exists, but allow me to say it out loud for the benefit of our listeners. We have been asked by our patron, I will get to that in a moment, to provide on a weekly basis objective and dispassionate Toronto Blue Jays analysis.
It's true. I agree with everything you just said.
With the same sort of strategies and data that we use at Fangraphs.com.
Yes, I agree with that as well.
I will move on to say that the aforementioned patron is not HomelandSports.com, although it has been brought to my attention by multiple readers over the past week that HomelandSports.com does exist, and it is almost precisely what you would expect it to be. It is Web 1.0, and it is by a patriotic sports fan.
We should just invoice him for ads for his site. Like, hey, that traffic spike you got lately, you owe us money.
Well, we are partially responsible for it. But no, our patron, in fact, is HomestandSports.com, who facilitate, among other projects, the Pitch Talks, events. Dave Cameron, would you please explain briefly what is a Pitch Talks event?
It is a gathering of baseball fans who enjoy each other's company and potentially adult beverages and would like to hear a variety of baseball writers, broadcasters, front office personnel, a general cornucopia of baseball people in their town talk about their hometown team.
That's right. That is right. A cornucopia is definitely present in that particular point. What I could tell you is about some upcoming Pitch Talks events. For example, Thursday, June 15th in Pittsburgh, starting at 7 p.m. That is an event that will be held at the Club Cafe in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and will feature, among others, Fangraphs.com's Travis Sochik, the prolific Travis Sochik, play-by-play announcer for the Pirates, Joe Block, and John Barrato. I think I said his name last time, and I said, why do I recognize it? And you said...
He's written at every website on Earth.
Fair enough.
Including Homeland Sports, probably.
Yeah, fair enough. Here's another event. We have one. This is called Baseball Then and Now. This is an event to take place at the Sport Gallery in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, June 26th, also at 7 p.m. And that is an event that features not only Keith Law, as I've mentioned in previous weeks, but also Lindsay Adler, who's a staff writer from the Deadspin. It is a one-on-one between Lindsay Adler and Keith Law. Presumably talking to some degree about prospects, and my guess is also Keith Law's new book.
I would bet he mentions it once or twice.
You think he would mention that? That seems to make sense. Let's see. Maybe I'll mention one other event. It pains me to say so, but this involves our colleague Jeff Sullivan, Pitch Talks event in Brooklyn, Monday, August 7th. It'll be a live podcast recording of Effectively Wild, which is another podcast at Fangraphs, a more popular podcast and Fangraphs. That will take place in Brooklyn, New York at the Bell House. That's at 7 p.m. featuring Ben Lindbergh and Jeff Sullivan. Ben Lindbergh, who wrote, if you didn't win it once, you'll never win it again. That's not what it's called. It's called Good Job at Baseball, friends. What is it called?
The only rule is it has to work.
Right, okay, the only rule is it has to work. Yeah, he wrote that. Okay, so they will be there. And Dave Cameron, this concludes the message from our sponsor/patron. So let us now turn to some objective and dispassionate analysis of the Toronto Blue Jays. Let us first begin by citing the team's win-loss record for the past week. That will serve as a foundation. We find that the record for the past week was 3-3. 3-3. So neither good nor bad, to say, although probably decent in the context that they're not losing at the same rate that they were at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, but given the hole they have to dig out of, 3-3 week probably can be considered a disappointment at this point. Well, obviously, it depends on opponents, but they can't play too many 3-3 weeks because they've got early season losses to make up for.
Okay, and speaking of those early season losses, what they did was to tank over the first couple months of the season. The team's chances of making the playoffs were originally quite high. As we speak today, Dave Cameron, the Toronto Blue Jays have a 30% chance, according to Fangraphs.com's methodology, a 30% chance of qualifying for, at the very least, a wild card game, and still, actually, an 18% chance of winning division, which seems quite high to me.
Yeah, well, I think the Yankees are probably playing over their heads right now, so I'm sure there's some expected regression factored in there.
If I am a person who has just gone to Fangraphs' projected standings, and I say something like, oh, that relative to the team's record, that 18% chance of winning the division looks quite high, what might I not be accounting for?
The fact that early season record does not predict future season record, right? So, like, if you just look at how a team has done thus far, you'd be like, well, the Colorado Rockies are the best team in baseball. Colorado Rockies, not the best team in baseball.
Not the best team
in baseball. They're not likely to continue playing the way they are, and that goes on both sides. Like, the Toronto Blue Jays are better than they played. The fact that they struggled the first couple weeks of the season does not make them a bad team, and you should continue to expect them to play better than they have previously.
Right, okay. Yeah, so, again, they are behind, technically behind the Rays and the Orioles in the standings, and yet have a better chance of winning the division than both of them. Let's talk about what is good and what is bad about the team. I think that maybe a continued surprise, a pleasant surprise for the team, well, there have been a couple, but let's start with Joe Biagini. Biagini, who pitched in a losing effort against at Seattle this week, but pitched well nevertheless.
He did. He's an interesting guy in that, like, was a Rule 5 pick last year, spent the year in relief, was good but not spectacular as a reliever, wasn't you know, the kind of guy where you're like, man, we just found a guy who's going to be an elite starting pitcher, but always had good enough command that you could say, you know, maybe this could work in the rotation if we gave him a chance. Then when they had a need earlier this year, they stuck him in the rotation, and it's actually worked out pretty well. He's continuing to get a lot of ground balls. He's continuing to limit hard contact. Not a huge strikeout guy, so, you know, maybe his upside is Mike Leake or something, but if you can just, like, randomly stumble into Mike Leake, that's not so bad.
Yes, that's right. Now, allow me to ask you a bit of a naive question, but I'm also curious about the answer. We were talking beforehand about how Biagini has been pretty good over his last three starts. I see that Joe Biagini has also, and I did not realize this, has also been assessed a loss in each of those three starts. If I am curious about attempting to summarize how well a pitcher has pitched and I want to avoid his win-loss record, what is like the first and second and third thing at which I should look?
Probably the first thing I would look at on an individual start basis would probably be something along the lines of WHIP. So walks plus hits per innings pitched, or divided by innings pitched. You could basically look at it and be like, how many base runners is this guy giving up? If this guy gives up a few base runners, but, you know, gets a loss because his team didn't score any runs for him, who cares, right? Overall, you're going to see WHIP not be a particularly useful metric long-term because there's a lot of artifacts of batting average and balls in play. But if you're just wondering, like, how well did this guy give his team a chance to win on this particular day, just looking at, like, base runners per innings pitched is not a terrible way to start out.
Okay, all right. And do we have a sense that now, of course, Joe Biagini has moved from the bullpen to the starting rotation, and he's had a couple of good starts. Is there any sort of research we have or any sort of anecdotal sort of wisdom about what happens when a pitcher has worked almost exclusively in relief and then is moved to the rotation, what that might mean for his durability, et cetera?
Yeah, I don't think we know really well. I mean, obviously, pitch counts are a thing the Blue Jays were imminently familiar with the last year with the whole Aaron Sanchez situation where he pitched in relief the year before. And because of that, then he was working as a starter. He hadn't been built up to throw a couple hundred innings. They were talking about moving back to the bullpen. But he pitched too well, and they just never did it. And they kept him in the rotation the whole year. It's possible that the Blue Jays could do something similar with Biagini, especially he's a little bit older. Not like a super young prospect. He's not Roberto Osuna or something like that. And, you know, not necessarily, like, as a guy who's a Rule 5 pick, I don't know that you're necessarily looking at, like, Biagini as a, you know, franchise cornerstone, necessarily, but you're happy with what he's giving you right now, but you're not necessarily planning 6 years out. So, you know, if you blow out Joe Biagini's arm in the next couple of years trying to get a World Series, so be it. I mean, that's like a little harsh.
Is that how Joe Biagini feels?
I don't, probably not. Right. But, you know, I think he probably is aware of the fact that he is a cog in the machine, and the Blue Jays' ultimate goal is to win the World Series with, you know, some older players, and that they're probably going to put the organization's interests ahead of his own personal interests, and that's one of the reasons players kind of have to speak up and be like, hey, my arm hurts, when their arm hurts. But I would imagine that at some point they're going to have a discussion about, you know, can Biagini actually pitch in the rotation the rest of the year, or are we going to have to move him to the back to the bullpen? Are we going to want him, count on him as a starter in October? Or is, you know, would it, our bullpen be better off with him pitching, you know, with Joe Smith to kind of shore up the group in front of Osuna? That's a conversation the team's absolutely going to have, and probably over the next month or so as they figure out what to trade for.
Over the past week, since we last spoke, three players have hit quite well for the team. Now, one of them, Ezequiel Carrera, has not done it so much in a full-time role, so I'm going to ignore him for the moment. One of them is Josh Donaldson, which is not surprising because Josh Donaldson is a former MVP. He's been one of the best players in Major League Baseball for, what, 3-4 years now? Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Five, maybe even.
Maybe even five. Yeah. And the third player is not surprising if you've been watching the Blue Jays this year, but is surprising if you were alive the previous 9 years. And that's Justin Smoak. Of course, Justin Smoak was at one time a relatively celebrated prospect, or decently, you know, decently thought of prospect. He's had some difficulties, but very good this year. I think he's hit 4 home runs over the last week, which has, in no small part, helped these Toronto Blue Jays. Now, here's my question about Justin Smoak: is towards the end of last week, Jeff Sullivan, who writes for FanGraphs, wrote a post called "There is urgent need for a Justin Smoak article." And what I would like to ask you is, why is there urgent need, or why was there urgent need for a Justin Smoak article?
Because he's continuing to hit home runs like crazy. I think Justin Smoak is maybe the major league leader in, Aaron Judge is a thing. Besides Aaron Judge, I think Justin Smoak is like second or third in the major leagues in home runs. He's 17 or 18 or something like that. I think that Justin Smoak has a lot of home runs. For a guy who has traditionally not hit a lot of home runs. And so, you know, obviously the Blue Jays were somewhat criticized, including by the yours truly, when they gave Justin Smoak a contract extension last year for reasons that no one could really figure out. It was a small deal, 2 years and $8 million or something, but no one really knew, like, why is there a sense of urgency to keep Justin Smoak around? But perhaps the Blue Jays saw something and thought that this could be another in the long line of kind of, like, busted prospects that they had fixed. It's what they did with Jose Bautista. It's what they did with Edwin Encarnacion. You know, it seems like the Blue Jays have some kind of organizational thing figured out where they figure out how to get guys to Toronto and teach them to tap into their power.
So, generally, we speak of a continuum between power and contact, right?
Yeah.
Typically, batters who hit for more power, it's because they are swinging harder with greater effort, and because of that, they're likely to strike out more often, likely to make less contact. On the other hand, you have guys who maybe have performed a kind of cost-benefit analysis and say, my chances of hitting many home runs, the probability is quite low, and therefore I will endeavor to make more contact. Justin Smoak has done an unlikely thing this year, which is to record the lowest strikeout rate of his career so far, and which is notable not only because it's the lowest strikeout rate he's ever recorded, but also because since he debuted in 2010, the strikeout rate has increased every single year. So he's done that, and he's also currently recording the highest isolated power figure, which is essentially slugging minus batting average. So he's also hitting for more power than he's ever done. That seems to be a difficult trick to pull. Do you have any sense of how he's gone about doing it?
Yeah, so in the article that you cited, Jeff Sullivan noted that Justin Smoak used to strike out a lot when he got to 2 strikes. He was pretty easy to put away. He basically couldn't hit a curveball. That was kind of the thing that Justin Smoak was known for, is if you threw him anything that was bendy, he was hopelessly lost. This year, Justin Smoak, I think, has like the third lowest strikeout rate in the majors when he gets to 2 strikes. He's done a much better job at either making contact or fouling pitches off or taking pitches out of the zone. And he's actually hitting curveballs for the first time in his career. So perhaps this is, you know, something the Blue Jays anticipated, is they can teach him how to hit a curveball, or at least teach him to improve enough that curveballs weren't automatic outs when he got to 2 strikes. And so Smoak, you know, always has had enough of an ability to hit fastballs that he hung around in the big leagues. But now that he's seemingly closed his one glaring weakness, he's making enough contact where He's not necessarily hitting the ball further, he's just hitting it more often. And, you know, with enough power, when you hit the ball more often, then you have a home run surge.
And as sort of an addendum to that piece by Jeff, I think one of the points that Sullivan was making was that Smoke is exhibiting a greater selectivity, right? Yeah. He sort of knows that he should swing at pitches in the strike zone and not outside of the strike zone, which was a challenge for him, and which has been less of a challenge for him this year. Another writer for Fangraphs, Eno Saris, wrote a really great piece both about and featuring Kevin Pillar, who talked about the way that he has essentially participated in, I think, what is loosely called the fly ball revolution, but essentially is a blanket term to describe greater power that guys are showing. One thing that Pillar has done is he's changed his batted ball simply by changing the pitches at which he's chosen to swing as well. So there is quite a lot that goes into selectivity of pitches.
Yeah, and if you think, like, man, why am I listening to this podcast with these two morons from Fangraphs? We'll note that Kevin Pillar, in that article, said, I mostly made these changes because of what Fangraphs said about me.
Yeah, right, so, yeah, the exact quote. Fangraphs is the reason I wanted to make a lot of changes.
Yeah, so you're welcome for fixing Kevin Pillar, Toronto.
Yeah, for the time being. And, of course, Kevin Pillar has always made pretty decent contact at a decent rate. He's also hitting the ball a little bit harder this year. Been worth a win.
I wonder what we could, like, where would we send a bill to all Blue Jays fans for improving their center fielder?
Yeah, City of Toronto, perhaps.
Yeah, we'll just, like, post it on, like, a door, like our 95
or maybe
PCs.
Next time Justin Trudeau.
Yeah, right. Just like, hey, here you go. You owe us this.
I'm sure we could recoup on that. Moving on, Dave Cameron, we've reached the middle of the program. In the middle of the program is typically an opportunity where I speak at length and perhaps at too much length about a Blue Jays prospect. I actually, to avoid speaking at too much length, what I've actually done is I've crafted a question that might be of some interest to you. The Toronto Blue Jays have AAA and AA affiliates in Buffalo and Manchester, New Hampshire, right? Both of which are rather close to Toronto. Of course, the Blue Jays also used to have their AAA affiliate in Las Vegas, which is not very close to Toronto. I'm curious if there's ever been any research done or you have any idle opinions about optimal locations for a team's minor league affiliates, I guess in particular their high minor league affiliates.
Yeah, I think you generally want them to be at least in the same time zone. You know, with the frequency of, you know, the 10-day disabled list usage, you're having a pretty common kind of trip to the DL, where Aaron Sanchez has already been on the DL three times, where you say, okay, I need to be able to scratch a starter from AAA in order to make sure that, not even that he needs to get here, but he needs to not use up his arm so that he's not available to make the next start. So, like, say Aaron Sanchez was scheduled to start on a Thursday, and you find out on Tuesday he's going to the DL or Monday or whatever, and you say, okay, well, tonight's starter, we're going to bump him till then. We need him to not make the start. But if you're in, like, drastically different time zones, that communication can be difficult. Getting the guy on a plane can be difficult. Obviously, the further you are away, the less likely there's a direct flight from one city to another. So I would suggest that at least you generally want them to be as close as possible, but within the same time zone is probably the bigger deal.
So what I hear you saying, if I understand correctly, in an ideal situation, if a minor league affiliate, so say you're where the bosses of the major league team, right? And we have to decide on a minor league affiliate, and it's either going to be 500 miles due south, it's still in Eastern time zone, for example, or it's going to be 500 miles west and maybe in the central time zone, then we would choose the one that was 500 miles south.
Yeah, I think you want to be in the same time zone. It makes communication
easier. What if it was 500 miles south versus 250 miles west, but still, but in a different time zone?
I think it would depend on the size of the city, maybe. Like, if the one that was 250 miles west had, you know, direct flights, and you could easily get someone from that western city to your city quicker, perhaps you would sacrifice the 1 hour time difference in order to have quicker access to travel. But a lot of times these AAA cities are, you know, not metropolitan hubs.
The Las Vegas 51s, that was
that's one of the metropolitan hubs.
Yeah, right. But listen, so currently it's the Mets, Before that, yeah. It was the Blue Jays for 4 years. Before that, it was the Dodgers for 8 years. Before that, it was the Padres for a while. Why did the minor league affiliates tend to bounce around so often?
Well, particularly, no one really wants to be in Vegas for a couple of reasons. One, the ballpark is an extremely hitter-friendly ballpark, so not a fun place to develop pitchers. Also, harder to develop hitters or evaluate hitters because everyone's going to post really good numbers there. And you're like, wow, this guy's hitting 350 with power. I guess I should call him up. And you're like, oh, that was Las Vegas. I got fooled.
It was Benny Agbayani, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of those guys. So, yeah, Vegas makes developing and evaluating your prospects harder. And then also, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Las Vegas has some temptations for young men, in which you may not be thrilled.
One of the best pizza places in the country.
Really? Which one?
Huh?
Which one?
That information is going to take another minute for me to discover.
So you're aware that it's there, but you don't know what it's called.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
Best pizza in Las Vegas, though, is something I will look up in clandestine fashion. As we, it's possible that it's Naked City Pizza, but I do not know. It also doesn't sound like the place I went to. Maybe it's Metro Pizza. Anyway, moving on, Dave Cameron. This is the portion of the show. We're close to the end. This is the portion of the show when we look ahead at the next week. We know that the Blue Jays went 3-3 in the last week. They face two and a half clubs this next week.
They face two and a half clubs.
They face two and a half clubs. So they have two and a half series, sort of.
Okay.
First against Tampa Bay.
Are we calling the Padres half a club?
A couple games against the Tampa Bay Rays, and then a three-game set versus the Chicago White Sox, all at home. Now, and then they end up in Texas after that. But what I would like to say first, nearly a 60% chance, or much better than a 60% chance of winning their next five games. So it's very promising, and would suggest that it would not be surprising to find that the team is 500 or better by the end of that stretch.
Yeah, they've got a weak opponents coming.
Right. Now, we mentioned this in passing during our last conversation, but bears repeating. Marco Estrada pitches today, has had some difficulty recently, but he's facing in Jake Odorizzi, a pitcher who throws a lot like Marco Estrada. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I mean, the Tampa Bay Rays are one of these organizations that also preaches the high fastball changeup combination that Estrada has kind of mastered. So not that surprising that the Rays have a pitcher who throws a lot of high fastballs and changeups. But Odorizzi is kind of one of these, you know, average strikeout rate or a little below average strikeout rate guys who, you know, generates weaker contact and tries to limit hits on balls in play. It's kind of a thin line to walk because if you're missing with your command and the ball gets hit 450 feet, you know, that's worse. And so it's easier to strike everybody out. But if you're Marco Estrada or Jake Odorizzi and you can't strike everybody out, then you could potentially have a decent career getting a bunch of, you know, weekly hit balls.
Tuesday, they face Alex Cobb. Alex Cobb, for those listeners who have maybe watched less baseball this year than they did two or three years ago, well, he's a bit of a different pitcher, isn't he? I mean, he used to have a fantastic changeup, but that is not really a central part of his repertoire at this point.
Yeah, he's gotten hurt a lot, and I think the injuries have changed him pretty significantly, and Alex Cobb is not the budding ace that he looked like a couple years ago.
Right. Speaking of budding aces, but I guess somewhat established aces, their Thursday game, which will mark the beginning of the White Sox series, will find the team pitting Joe Biagini against Jose Quintana.
Supposed ace.
Right. Not one to overpower hitters. Now, there was Craig Edwards at Fangraphs wrote an interesting piece about Quintana. Said basically the main difference between Quintana this year and in years past, after I think at that point it was maybe 12 starts, was three home runs. But those three home runs had spelled the entire difference between his numbers on a rate basis this year and over the past few years.
Yeah, home runs are bad. If you give them up, your numbers get worse.
Right, but the idea is if one is looking forward, like for example, looking forward to a Blue Jays game this Thursday, should one ultimately expect Quintana to be more like the pitcher who's given up three more home runs? Because he has some part of his game has been based on home run suppression. And do we know anything about the mysteries of the home run suppression at this point?
Yeah, I mean, like, generally, Matt Cain did this for a while, where for, like, 5 or 6 years, Matt Cain just didn't give up home runs. So he was a much better pitcher than we would have expected if he had, a normal home run rate. And then all of a sudden, one day, Matt Cain started giving up home runs, and, like, became bad almost overnight. Unfortunately for the Giants, they'd already paid him $125 million. They still pay him like $25 million a year or $20 million a year, whatever it is, based on what he was when he suppressed home runs. This is one of those skills that, like, it's really nice when you have it. It also goes away really fast. And so while Quintana has been excellent in the past, there was always some risk that it was going to go away. We don't know for sure that it has gone away. Obviously, after a few months, things could correct itself. Quintana could go back to limiting home runs again. But this was always a skill that has some fleeting ability to it, and it wouldn't shock me if Jose Quintana continued to give up home runs at a more normal rate than he has in the past, especially facing the Blue Jays.
And then the latter two games of that White Sox series, the best chance probably for the Blue Jays to win is Marcus Stroman versus Mike Pelfrey. Pelfrey was a former ninth overall pick, and I'm inclined to believe that he's had a good season at some point in the past. However, it has not been very recently. I think it seems to me damning when a team rosters Mike Pelfrey.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, I know the Tigers intentionally gave Mike Pelfrey money last year and then quickly figured out that was a bad idea and cut him. But if you're if you've got Mike Pelfrey in your rotation, you're probably not trying to win.
Okay, right. And it's possible the White Sox are not expressly trying to win.
The White Sox are not trying
to win. They're trying to win. What are they trying to do?
They're trying to stockpile assets for the future.
Okay, that's right. They have a couple of good assets.
They do.
Yon Mankata, for example.
Yeah, Mankata has struck out a lot of late. There was some talk earlier in the year when he was hitting like 350 in May or whatever. They're like, you know, clearly ready for the big leagues. That horse has calmed down, and Mankata still has more work to do.
Okay, right. But an interesting prospect. And then Derek Holland. Derek Holland, I think, has not, of course, this happens with pitchers. He's not been the same in over the last few years as he was at his peak. What does one expect from Derek Holland these days?
87-mile-an-hour fastballs.
Okay.
So, enjoy right-handed Blue Jays hitters.
Right. Now, Jay Happ will be the starter in that particular game, which is scheduled for Saturday, perhaps. That sounds right. For Saturday, and Happ was fantastic in his most recent game. Whatever his other virtues, the one that he demonstrated most in this one was striking out many batters while not allowing any walks. 8-1 strikeout to walk ratio against 25 batters. That's very good.
That's kind of his thing.
Yeah, that's good.
And then occasionally he gives up home runs.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the week ahead, Dave Cameron, and that also brings us to the conclusion of the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast. So thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. That has been Dave Cameron. He's the manager of Fangraphs. I'm Carson Sestouli, and this has been the Pitch Talks Blue Jays podcast.